We've had these four readings from the Bible, these four windows onto the Christmas story, and I guess much of what we heard is quite familiar to us. And the question I'd like us to think about just for a couple of moments is this. Why would you want any of this, what we've heard today, why would you want any of it to be true? Now let's go back to that first window, that long view, written 700 years before the first Christmas. Now Isaiah the prophet wrote about a people who walk in darkness. Now it was written so long ago and written so far away, and yet I reckon it could easily have been written yesterday about people who walk in darkness. And let me just show you why I think it's such an appropriate description for now. Isaiah's message speaks about that light that shines into the darkness. And it says this light shines and it brings joy. And then he compares the joy to two different situations. He says, first of all, the joy is like when people rejoice at the harvest. Now imagine what that was like. When your food supply depended on the success of the harvest. Now imagine what it'd be like as the year goes on and the store of food gets less and less and less and worry begins to set in. Uncertainty, deep uncertainty, like a rock in your stomach. Now a successful harvest depends on so many things out of your control. As the time for the harvest to come gets closer, the anxiety would rise. If the harvest fails, you won't be able to feed your family. Now, there's no Tesco to go to. There's no welfare state. There's no food bank. There's nothing. But when the harvest comes, when the harvest has been successfully gathered in, you imagine the relief, the release of the tension, the joy. People rejoice at the harvest because it is the end of worry. Back in 2008, in the middle of the financial crisis, the Times ran a headline that said, "The Age of Uncertainty." Now, we're 11 years on from there, but I think we could say the same thing today, couldn't we? The issues might be slightly different, but uncertainty remains fixed. Uncertainty on a global scale, uncertainty on a national scale, uncertainty on a personal scale. Now this darkness that the Bible speaks of is the darkness of uncertainty, the darkness of worry about the future, the darkness of not knowing what will happen. I reckon all of us are at least a little familiar with that. But this message of old speaks of light shining into the darkness, light that brings joy, and then the next situation that is used to help understand it is the joy of warriors, warriors who rejoice as they divide the plunder. Now, when does that happen? When do warriors divide the plunder? It's when the battle is over. That's the joy. The joy is that the war is over, the conflict is ended. And again, I think this is a shade of dark that we all know too well. Conflict and struggle. Now, Christmas time, you go to the supermarket and they're playing the Christmas songs. It's the most wonderful time of the year, with the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you, be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. But for many people, it's not, is it? Christmas isn't wonderful. In fact, it's a painful reminder of conflict. Tensions are intensifying. And being told, be of good cheer, it's like having a slap in the face. Conflict has not escaped the human race. Wars don't seem to stop. Relationships still shatter. And we know how much conflict and struggle is still such a part of life. And we know the struggle. We know the struggle that every relationship is terminal. But there's another passage in Isaiah that writes about the dark shadow that lies over all people. And he calls it the shadow of death. The thing about darkness is it's dark, isn't it? And this is pretty dark. People walk in darkness. People live lives full of anxiety and uncertainty and struggle and conflict. And lives that are either meandering or they're careering, but they're going to the same destination. We don't like to mention it. But the end is the same for the rich and for the poor. Whatever race or nationality, whatever your lot in life, all of us one day will draw a final breath. So when Isaiah wrote about people who walk in darkness, he could have been writing about us. He could have been writing about now. I don't think we would dare to deny it. So the question is, what do you do with that? What do you do with the darkness? It's there. You've got to do something. Now, we could despair. That would be an honest option. Or we could deny it, couldn't we? We could pretend it's not happening. We could paper over the cracks. We could put on those plastic smiles that bury the hurt deep inside. We could do all of that. Or maybe we could do something more sophisticated. We could relabel the darkness. We could rebrand it. We could teach ourselves to call the darkness light. We could tell ourselves that what we know is wrong with the world is not really wrong and that everything's fine. We could do all of that. We could despair. We could deny. Or we could consider the Christmas option. But the Bible insists on the darkness, not just for Isaiah's time, but it says it's the state of play for all of us, for everyone. And the Bible gives a pretty radical analysis of it. The Bible tells how darkness is connected to departure. Now, if you shut off the power supply to your house and then you wonder why the lights don't work. And the Bible tells how darkness is connected to departure from God. You shut out the author of life and the result is inevitable. You shut out the light, you're bound to be left with the darkness. But then Isaiah of old didn't just write about darkness. He wrote about light shining into the darkness. And he said, the reason is this. The reason is for to us a child is born. To us a son is given. Someone is coming. That was Isaiah's message. Someone is coming who will reign on David's throne. Someone who will come and have the power to uphold life in the light forever. And when we look through those other windows, Matthew and Luke, their accounts of the birth of Jesus, both of them, I don't know if you noticed, but they both make mention of David. And you see, they understood that the message of Isaiah had happened. They understood that the light had dawned, that the child had been born, the son had been given. They understood that the child in the manger, that the babe of Bethlehem is that child, that this son is that son that Isaiah wrote about. The one who's come to be king forever. And he brings in himself the end of worry and the end of conflict. And even the end of death. That's what John wrote about, that fourth window that we look through. That in him was life, wrote John. And that life was the light of all mankind. This child was called Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. The darkness is connected to departure. Departure from God. But Jesus' mission is to reconnect people to God. His mission is to reconcile. His mission is to turn on the lights and to infuse death with life. That's the Christmas option. And these are really bold claims. Now, I don't know what you think of them. Maybe it sounds like wishful thinking. But why would you want it to be true? Well, surely, however fanciful it might sound, we want it to be true because of the darkness. We can't deny the darkness. Deep down, we fear it. We want the Christmas story not to be a fable. We don't want it to be made up. We want it to be true because this is the option of hope. See, the Christmas option, it makes pretty outrageous claims, pretty extravagant claims. Now, we've just been through a general election campaign. We're probably pretty numbed to people making extravagant claims. And no one seems to credit any of the political parties with being committed to truth. Every message has needed to be fact-checked. That's the phrase, isn't it? It's got to be fact-checked. Well, I guess I want to challenge you to do that with the Christmas option. No, the claims about Jesus, do some fact-checking. Now, we can follow what happened to this babe born in Bethlehem. We can read the historical records. We can see that when he grew up, he did and said things that had never been done or said before. His life verified the claims. And we can read about how he was arrested and executed. And then he was buried. And we can read the eyewitnesses record that after 3 days he rose from the dead. And with that, humanity was shown a path out of the darkness, a path out of the shadow of death and into the light of life eternal. So I want to challenge you. If you want to do some fact-checking, we run a course here at Kingfisher Church called Christianity Explored, which is just as it says it is. It's a chance for you to check the facts, a chance for you to give yourself the opportunity to decide for yourself if there's any truth in it. Now, why would you want the Christmas story to be real? People still walk in darkness. That's why. So we could despair of that. We could deny it. Or we could examine the Christmas option. In 1877, there was a local tragedy here in Little Paxton. In 1877, there was a young lady called Jane who was 26 years old and she died. She had one child. She had a daughter who was Emily. Emily was 2 years old when her mum died. Jane is buried in Little Paxton. 3 years later, almost to the day, little Emily also died when she was 5 years old. The following year, Jane's mum died. Jane was an only child and her dad's name was Peter. Now this guy, Peter, I don't know anything more about him other than the fact that in the space of 4 years, he buried his only granddaughter, his only daughter and his wife. Now, I can't imagine what that would do to a man. I can't imagine the kind of darkness that he experienced. But what I do know is that on his grave are written these words. Yeah, it's the words from a hymn. Jesus, lover of my soul, let me to thy bosom fly. I suspect Peter knew that song, that hymn, pretty well. Now, Peter didn't avoid the darkness. But he had a saviour to run to. He knew that Jesus had come to shine light into the darkness and that he could bring all of his struggles and all of his troubles and all of his sorrows and he could leave it with the saviour, with the lover of his soul. That's the hope of Christmas, that Christ has come into the world so that we have someone to run to, someone who can take us through the darkness, even through death, into life beyond. Before we sing our final carol, as we think about the Christmas option, Nikki's going to come and read a Christmas poem.
If God exists, surely he doesn't care. He's hiding, cowering, deaf to my prayer. If God exists, surely he's not good, or he'd stop crime, end war, do all he could. And yet, long ago, was an answer not found? When from the silence of God came a sound? A baby was born, cried aloud, breathed in. The hidden maker himself put on skin. In Jesus, the face of God was now bare. How can we still say that he doesn't care? He left the glories of heaven for me, healed sick and broken, then died on a tree. Listen, you say, that was millennia ago. Jesus is gone. It's just us here below. Maybe he was God, but he's not here now. If he does still care, I'd like to know how. Here lies a mystery that startles the heart. Jesus went, but of himself he left part. All who followed, trusted him, bowed the knee, would have his spirit, though no one would see. Where are these followers now to be found? Well, you're in church. Have a good look around. We've been called hypocrites, sinners, and worse. And sadly, beneath, there is truth to that curse. And yet, in each sinner, God made a way to plant his treasure in the cracked jar of clay. This plastic bag, holds a diamond within. Each believer connects directly to him. Star maker, life giver, one who forgives, who wrote your DNA, made you to live. The Father who cares oh so much about you offers in his hand treasure for you too. For all who look in the manger this night, stumbling with your doubt and pride, see the light. Whoever you are, Jesus calls to you. Come to me, precious child. I'll make you new.